order, the House Committee on Environment and Water. This would be the right time to admonish late committee members, but they're not here.
And Andrew.
The later we might end, although I'm optimistic that we may still get out on time today. We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2671, and I'm going to ask Scott Robinson and Randy Tucker to lead us off on this bill.
It's like I'm on time, and then somebody comes to me.
Reminder to turn off those cell phones.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Randy Tucker. I'm the Legislative Affairs Manager for Metro, and unbelievably, almost 2 months into this legislative session, this is the first time I've testified, and I won't be talking very long. I am here mainly to introduce Metro's Chief Deputy Chief Operating Officer Scott Robinson, but because we haven't been before you before, I guess I'll just do a quick prelude. I believe you all know that Metro is the only elected regional government of the country, and we are the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area. We work on issues that are urban in nature and regional in nature, things that cross city and county lines. We exist we operate under a charter that was approved by the voters of the region and also state statute, and obviously one of those statutes is what we're here to talk about today. Coming around right now is a copy of the bill with one hand-engrossed amendment that I've submitted to your committee administrator, but obviously there's plenty of time to get that drafted, so I just thought I'd put it in front of you for now, just so that we're talking about the same bill. It's not terribly consequential, I don't think. It just deletes the second half of the phrase, but I think what's deleted is generally encompassed in what is not deleted, and so I just thought I'd put that in front of you for the moment. With that, I'd like to introduce Scott Robinson.
Thank you. Mr. Robinson.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Cannon and members of the committee. My name is Scott Robinson. I am the Deputy Chief Operating Officer, for Metro. Among the many responsibilities that I carry, I do have responsibility for managing the solid waste operation. And within that operation, Metro has responsibilities in management of the regional solid waste system. There are four primary areas of responsibility that are carried there. They include the exercise of creation of a regional plan to meet state-mandated recycling requirements, franchising and licensing of solid waste facilities, and then also ensuring that we are coordinating with local governments on recycling programs and providing household hazardous waste services. What I would specifically like to talk about today is the nature of ORS 459335, which is where Metro derives its funding and authority relative to solid waste management. And if I could, just for a moment, I just wanted to read from that. ORS 459335 indicates that use of fees collected by the Metropolitan Service District, notwithstanding any other provision of ORS 268330, and the Metropolitan Service District shall use monies collected by the district as service or user fees for solid waste disposal for activities of the Metropolitan Service District related to solid waste and the related planning, administration, overhead costs of the district. The problematic portion of this particular statute concerns whether projects or programs might be considered as either not activities of the Metropolitan Service District nor sufficiently related to solid waste. More recently, in working with our stakeholders at the regional level, local governments, local haulers, as well as the Oregon Department of Environmental Quality, we had constructed a program which would offer a diesel retrofit incentive to the private haulers. In offering that particular incentive program, we ran into an empowerment in which we were advised that such a use might be problematic under the current statute. In addressing and bringing forth House Bill 2671, we are looking to clarify the authority that Metro has for use of funds. We believe that and anticipate fully that Metro will see its regional stakeholders identify additional projects and programs that will require such funding that currently may or may not be authorized within the language of ORS 459325. So with that in mind, we are looking for clarification through House Bill 2671, and if it passes, we believe that we will be able to exercise and carry out our regional solid waste management plan, which is a plan constructed with our stakeholders, both private and public partners, which includes a section on sustainable operations. Those sustainable operations include goals that reflect reducing greenhouse gases and diesel emissions, reducing stormwater runoff, reducing resource use and toxics, and constructing solid waste and recycling facilities to LEED and or equivalent standards. The challenge we have had in, again, the interpretation of the current statute is whether Metro has the ability to fund particular projects in private facilities. So House Bill 2671 is intended, from our perspective, to clarify that level of responsibility, to ensure that we have the ability to participate with the private industry and investment in projects that would lead to the achievement of our regional solid waste management plan. Specifically, 2671, I just want to reiterate, is intended to be provide the ability to anticipate not just the current program that we have on the table, the diesel retrofit program, but to allow us to work with stakeholders to fund projects that would be similar in nature but may or may not be identified at this point in time. To give you a sense of what some of those might look like, we do have regional stakeholders in the local hauler association who are interested in compressed natural gas, for example, as an alternative fuel to diesel. That is something that, again, within the context of the current ORS statute, it is unclear that we would be able to assist with that kind of a conversion. We have facility haulers as well who have are trying to currently meet mandates for stormwater runoff treatment. And again, Metro does not have the ability to facilitate nor work directly with those individual haulers or facilities in terms of either building bioswale or alternative stormwater treatment capability to ensure that they stay both in operation and in compliance with DEQ. Last but not least, I would like to indicate that, again, the ability to participate with private industry in incenting their ability to work with stormwater runoff from the standpoint of separation of water and oil is, again, another project identified within the context of the Regional Solid Waste Management Plan and the sustainable operations work that we've been doing with local entities. But, again, under current ORS regulation or the current ORS statute, we do not believe are empowered to participate with industry in those projects. With that in mind, what we would like to do and what we are proposing with House Bill 2671 is to simply clarify, again, Metro's role, responsibility, and its capability to utilize and leverage regional solid waste funding. We certainly have heard along the way some concerns relative to the bill. We have, in particular, that the bill may unnecessarily broaden Metro's powers. We just want to make it clear that it is our position that this language is intended to clarify our existing powers and that it is not intended to be an expansion of a funding source, but simply to, again, clarify what the funds that are currently collected can be used for. As important, if not more important, Metro continues to maintain public processes in order to develop, fund programs and projects, and that those public processes undergo broad stakeholder involvement, public review, as well as formal rate-making proceedings, in addition to budget hearings. The funds would not be able to be used for projects that are outside the scope of the solid waste industry in terms of, again, the generation, collection, transportation, and ultimate disposal. It would not be something that would be eligible for use, for example, in restoration of stream beds or salmon habitat that is totally unrelated to the solid waste industry. Again, there are concerns with the bill. I just want to be upfront about that in terms of expansive, what is viewed as the expansive language. We view this as a clarification, and we think it's important that we are able to achieve both the ORS recycling requirement as well as the regional solid waste management plan outcomes, and that in order to do that, we need this clarification in language to be able to participate directly with private industry. For the past two decades, I will say that we have successfully worked with local governments and the private sector to manage the regional solid waste management system efficiently and effectively. Again, we believe that this language, this clarifying language, is essential to be able to continue that in anticipation of addressing some of the environmental concerns that our industry is creating along the way. I should say that the state of Oregon, of course, is moving to create a more sustainable future by addressing a full range of environmental impacts resulting from the use of natural resources. This clarification amendment is intended to enable Metro to manage the region's solid waste industry consistent with that direction. I would also like to indicate that we have been authorized by the City of Portland to indicate that they are in support of this particular amendment as well, and passage of House Bill 2671. And with that, I would like to urge you, as Metro, to endorse and pass House Bill 2671. Thank you.
Thanks very much for your testimony, Mr. Robinson. Mr. Tucker, did you want to add?
I just wanted to add one other point. If you look at page 2 of Scott's testimony, about two-thirds of the way down, you'll see the definition of solid waste management that's currently in statute, and I just wanted to draw your attention to that and note that the language of this bill is essentially in better alignment with what's already in statute, defining what we're talking about when we talk about solid waste management, more of a 21st century approach to the topic.
Thank you. Are there questions for either Jim or Representative Gilliam?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's Mr. Robinson, right?
That's correct.
I may need a little more convincing that this is more on the clarification and not on the broadening side. But I wanted to ask you, if, let's say, we went forward with a bill that was restricted to just language saying we want to give you the authority to provide equipment to reduce diesel emissions from solid waste collection vehicles in the region, and that was all we did for you.
Right.
How quickly do you think you'd be back here under some of the projects that you alluded to get additional projects or authority?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gillum, certainly no later than 2 years, frankly, in the next cycle. We would be looking at new technologies and or new changes to the way that the facilities operate, in which they are looking for the opportunity to maximize their recovery, maximize their operations, to be as efficient as possible, to be compliant with ORS regulations currently. Compressed natural gas would be certainly a probably a first-order addition that we would see.
So, follow up. So you're pretty teed up to go on to the next project, like the compressed natural gas or stormwater. This is maybe a little hard to, or unfair for you, subjective for you to answer, but how would you characterize these projects in terms of collaboration with the private sector and other entities? Would you say usually you go to them, they come to you, or it's more collaborative?
Chair Cannon, Representative Gilliam, these are collaborative projects. The projects that come forth are projects that are not instituted unilaterally on the part of Metro. These are projects that have to have broad embrace, frankly, across the industry, as well as they have to have a return on the kind of investment that we would be looking to make. With that in mind, these projects and programs typically emanate out of our advisory groups, and we have a solid waste advisory council, for example, that provides guidance and ultimately recommends to Metro Council what programs to incorporate at what point in time into our budget and subsequently incorporate into our rate-making process.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you. Other questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The word of greatest interest to me is the word generation. Are you guys already in the recycling business as we speak?
I'm sorry, could I?
Generation, are you already in the word generation appears in here, and that looks, I'm just curious, are you already in the recycling, are you already, as you collect garbage, putting out recycling containers and trying to head off the generation of garbage that's, or solid waste? That's what this appears to suggest, and I'm just curious if you're already doing that.
Chair Cannon, as well as Representative Vince, we in fact have, as part of our regional solid waste management plan and ultimately our ability to meet the recovery goals for the state, we are moving our model to one of stewardship and one of being able to avoid waste prior to its landfilling, if you will. We do not directly do recycling. We have our two facilities, and then we certainly work with the private sector relative to recovery of materials at their respective sites. We encourage that recovery. We are also working through programs to be able to identify materials that would be appropriate to minimize prior to its entry into the waste stream.
Follow-up, Representative.
Is this a conflict with anybody else that's doing this now, or is this an area you already occupy?
Chair Cannon, Representative Pence. Again, the primary, going back to House Bill 2671 in terms of its intent and what it would authorize, it's the use of funds question. Currently, the interpretation that we have received has largely restricted the use of those funds to metro facilities, the transport, the on-site collection and transportation of those materials. We have not been able to directly participate with the private sector in the hauling side of the industry, nor in the materials recovery side of the facilities.
Thank you.
Okay. Any further questions? Great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Holly Sears and David White.
Good afternoon, Chair Cannon, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Holly Sears, and I'm the Governmental Affairs Director for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association. ORA is a trade association representing private solid waste management companies here in Oregon. Our association is opposed to House Bill 2671 as it is currently drafted. I'm going to hand most of the talking over to Dave White, who is our regional representative in the metropolitan area, to share our concerns about the language in this bill. However, there are two points that I would like to make. First off, we are working on some proposed language internally with our members, but I can say that the language we propose speaks to the using these funds for costs to reduce the greenhouse gas emissions for solid waste collection vehicles, which is originally what Metro came to us and wanted to use these funds for about a year ago, and we agreed to that. The examples they provided today, we have not heard of before this hearing today. I would also like to point out that Art Schlack from the Association of Oregon Counties had a conflicting meeting today, but he also offered to you that they also have concerns about this bill as well. With that, I'd like to turn it over to Dave White, but I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Go ahead, Dave.
Chair Cannon, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Dave White, and I am regional representative for the Oregon Refuse and Recycling Association in the metro region. One of my responsibilities in that capacity is to sit on the Metro Solid Waste Advisory Committee, which represents our industry in the Portland metro area, and I've done that since 1995. During that time, I've witnessed a reoccurring situation, which is not unusual, I think, in government. Metro needs money. And that's for solid waste programs and unrelated solid programs that are not related to solid waste. Some examples in the past have been Metro had a bond manager that bought some green spaces. They wanted to improve those green spaces, and I think the first idea was, well, let's have some solid waste money to help do that. They couldn't do it, so they increased their excise tax on solid waste to pay for the improvements in the green spaces. There's a program called Nature in the Neighborhoods. It is a program that does a lot of water-oriented improvements in neighborhoods, and people can apply for those funds. Again, that was paid for through excise tax, not through the regional systems fee. Last year, one of the council members recommended that part of the Oregon outdoor school, be paid for through the regional systems fee. And at one point, it was going to be paid by excise tax. I believe it was too much money, so they are now paying for that through the regional systems fee. And now we've had this idea of paying for diesel retrofits. Metro, like I said, pays for these programs through these two sources primarily. Now, this has an impact on tip fees. If the excise tax or the regional system fee goes up, it's included in what we call the tip fee, which is the disposal amount that's charged at the transfer station. If that's passed along through local governments, it becomes an increase that the consumer pays, that the customer pays. I'll explain why that's problematic in just a minute. I think I'd like to take just a minute here to explain to you about the regional systems fee. That's what it's called at Metro. I believe it would fall into the category of a service fee. Originally, when I started on the Metro SWAC 15 years ago, it was called the regional services fee, and it was supposed to be related to solid waste-related activities that were regional in nature. Now, some businesses, primarily in the metro region, complained and said, well, we don't get the services that this fee is supposed to pay for, yet we're paying for the fee. And it was for things like waste reduction, hazardous waste, and illegal dump site cleanup, things that are regional in nature. The response from Metro, and I think the Solid Waste Advisory Committee agreed, was, well, you may not receive the services directly, but you're part of the system and you benefit from the system. Therefore, you should continue to pay the fee. And the name was changed to the regional systems fee rather than a service fee. If your argument is you're not receiving the services, but you're part of the system, we'll call it a systems fee. The regional systems fee is charged all generators in the system, and it's levied on all waste that's generated in the region, which is defined as within the metro boundary, wherever it's disposed of. So whether it goes to Arlington or whether it goes to another facility, it's charged if it's generated within the metro area. It historically pays for waste reduction, hazardous waste, illegal dump site cleanup, education and outreach, landfill closure, and facility regulation. And I would submit to you that these are all related to solid waste disposal. Now, like Holly just said, our industry has opposed the regional systems fee, and we oppose this because we believe it's an expansion of that use. It would allow Metro, we believe, to use these fees for services or for programs that are not directly related to the region's solid waste and recycling program, and I'll tell you why that's a problem. We are trying to reach a 64% recovery goal in the metro region, and we're supposed to be doing it by 2009. I think we probably all admit and agree that that's a pretty big task. We may not do it, but it takes new programs, and it takes money. It takes investment in equipment and programs to accomplish that goal. Diverting funds from the solid waste programs that this fee is to be paying to help pay for and programs that support that is inconsistency with that type of commitment that will help us reach that goal. I think it's really important to note that Metro has a committee called the Rate Committee. They met for the first time in this year on Tuesday. Their 2008 report, and their charge is to review and recommend solid waste fees, basically the tip fee at Metro. The 2008 report that was sent to the Metro Council said this, and I'm going to read this verbatim. It was the headline or the caption was, "Local programs will be pressured." As the tip fee rises, local elected officials will have to grapple with the increased disposal cost within their collection rates. The combined impact of tip fee increases and inflationary adjustments to collection costs may cause local elected officials to delay or eliminate new programs such as organics collection or enhanced commercial recycling. Metro may want to be aware that significant increases in the tip fee often have this crowding out effect on local programs. Now that brings us to this diesel retrofit discussion. As I said, I've been on the Metro SWAC for 15 years, and recently we've been talking about this diesel retrofit issue and actually investing in new trucks. And we had a number of presentations from the DEQ. Some of their clean air folks came. and told us about the problems of diesel emissions and the impact that has on health. And the group agreed that this was something that needed to be addressed, and if the solid waste collection vehicles could be a part of the solution, we should do that. So we had these discussions, and during those discussions, the hauling industry agreed that a regional approach was appropriate, and I'll tell you why. Really for four reasons. One is these are solid waste collection vehicles directly related to the services that are provided in the solid waste disposal industry. Local governments could pass rate increases at the local level to pay for that type of retrofit or for a new truck. However, if some jurisdictions chose to do that within the metro region and some didn't, we felt that it would be unfair because these trucks are used multi-jurisdictionally. You don't just use the truck in Lake Oswego. You may also use it in Portland. So having the citizens of one jurisdiction pay for the retrofit and the trucks used somewhere else didn't seem fair. So we said a regional approach in this situation makes sense. The regional systems fee, as I mentioned, is paid by all generators. It was only after we had this discussion, and I believe after Metro Council talked about it, that their attorney said, we don't think you can use the regional systems fee for that purpose, and said we're going to have to go to the legislature and get some expansion, maybe it's clarification, but some expansion on what that fee can be used for. And we agreed with that. The bill that's before you now is not what we had originally discussed with Metro. The bill was supposed to pay for diesel retrofits. When it was first discussed, it was for diesel retrofits. When we met with Metro after the draft of the bill was made available and discussed this and said, we understand the diesel retrofit part of this, and if it's about clean air, let's say it. Let's expand the language to include clean air. If you want to talk about fuels that have greenhouse gas effects, let's deal very directly with the issue that we are facing. We asked why you need the broader language and what types of programs would be addressed. For the first time today, we've heard some of those. We've never even discussed this sort of a partnership between local between industry and Metro that I know about on those two projects. So that's a conversation that might be had. If it is truly Metro's intention to deal with this greenhouse gas issue and the air quality issue, we would support a bill that does that. I guess just lastly, the comment was made that Metro has a SWAC, and I've been on that SWAC for 15 years. We actually had a meeting probably 4 months ago, it might have been longer, with Metro where the proposal was to disband it. And I'm having meetings next week to talk with Metro about a proposal to maybe meet on a sort of case-by-case basis to discuss issues. And I don't know what's going to happen with the Metro SWAC, but as of now, my understanding is it if it doesn't exist, it's in abeyance. So I don't know how we'll have these conversations in the future and what context and what forum they'll happen, but we would certainly enjoy that opportunity with Metro. And thank you very much for your time.
Thanks very much for your testimony. Questions? Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You're a statewide organization, is that right? You have members across the state?
Chair Cannon, Representative Bailey, yes, that's correct.
Fault, Mr. Chair.
Yes,
I'm curious, in your other jurisdictions with local governments, are there restrictions for each of the local governments on how they can use the fees that your members pay?
Chair Cannon and Representative Bailey, if you're talking about franchise fees, which generally the local jurisdictions charge franchise fees, those most of the time, depending upon the city code, charter, or whatever gives them their direction, those can be used as basically general funds. Sources. They're not limited to solid waste. Now, Portland has a few funds. One is the commercial tonnage fee, which is specifically limited to use in the solid waste industry. So, depending upon which fee it is and what limitations the city itself places on it, I believe that would control.
So then it would be, is my understanding correct, that it would be correct to say that there are other local governments that have franchise fees that can spend these dollars through their general fund in ways that they see fit?
Chair Cannon and Representative Bailey, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Thank you. And thank you both for testifying.
Thank you.
Let's move to Mr. Dewey and Palmer Mason.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chair. On behalf of Waste Management, Mike Dewey. Mr. Tucker signed me up, so I'm not sure exactly how he had me neutral for or against. Let me start by saying, one, Waste Management is a member of ORA. It's a very, very good organization. We're perhaps their largest member. We sat down with Metro maybe 2 months ago, and it was somewhat surprising because prior to that, Waste Management had a meeting with the City of Portland to talk about moving from a diesel retrofit program to perhaps mandating for the commercial trucks some sort of natural gas hybrid. And I discussed with you, in our mind, an innovative program on the bottle bill by which we wanted to use some revenues. Now, I just bring that up because here is another opportunity for Waste Management and other companies to move from the diesel side to the compressed natural gas. And we want to do that because we are doing it in Seattle. We're moving in that direction. We're moving in that direction in Southern California. And as I explained to you, the particulate emissions are zero, and the greenhouse gas emissions, NOx, are zero when you go to the 2010 trucks, compliant trucks. With retro diesel, you don't get to the greenhouse gas emissions, as I recollect. You get to the particulates. So we're looking at any source of funds that we can get our hands on to move to the new technology, in the sense that, one, the trucks are more expensive, and you have to go to a new fueling station, and that's more expensive. For what is unique for us in the Portland market is that the Portland market on the commercial side is not franchised. It's an open market. And so if we make a investment in additional trucks and, let's say, do the right thing, our prices are going to be higher by virtue of just our costs are higher. So it would be difficult for us to do that, reflecting that we might lose customers down the road because if our prices are higher. So we were very surprised when Metro met with us and said, we're trying to figure out a way to make investments in new technologies, and we wanted to be sure that we were thinking about technologies going forward. Now, I understand the bill is broad, and I think that is an issue. We've looked at some language internally that we think we could work with. I think we can narrow this and we can make this work. And at the end of the day, we can get something that is good for the environment. It's good for the constituents. One of the areas that we have to be concerned about is, and we have to have the conversation about, how high is the fee? Because what we don't want to do is make the fee so high that people aren't choosing to take solid waste collection and they're doing something else, illegal dumping. I think we can get to that. The Metro system is very unique. You can't compare it to really any other parts of the state, and therefore it's a little bit confusing, and we work with Metro almost on a daily basis. So with that, Mr. Chair, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I think we can find the language that gets us to the right approach here.
Thank you, Mr. Dewey. Let's go ahead to Palmer and then...
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you. Palmer Mason with the Department of Environmental Quality. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2671. DEQ views the management of solid waste as something more than just the collection and disposal of trash. We think that we ought to be looking at solid waste management in a way that ensures that we get the biggest environmental gain for the amount of effort that we put into it. And that's why we're working on programs like waste prevention and product stewardship. We also see that House Bill 2671 could also help us manage solid waste in the same sort of holistic way. If we're able to give clear authority to Metro, and it sounds like expanded authority, to use their fees to address broader environmental impacts, then we're once again doing more than just simply managing and collecting the trash. We're really trying to do something better for the environment. And we think that it's very important to support such regional and local efforts to think outside the box and try to do more with our limited resources. Understand that one of the primary purposes behind this bill is looking at the diesel emissions issue. And that's an important one. At DEQ, our scientists tell us that diesel emissions are a priority air pollutant that carries significant risk to human health and the environment. Our scientists actually do tell us that it is a significant issue when it comes to greenhouse gases. And because the garbage trucks have to do so much heavy travel to manage solid waste, they are a source that we have long been interested in and trying to address. The problem, of course, has always been money, and House Bill 2671 is a way to provide some funding to address those diesel emissions. One last comment, and I want to be very clear on this point. We see the state's role here is just trying to be a champion for taking solid waste and doing bigger things in terms of the environment. We don't want to assert ourselves in the regional and local issue about what the proper use of fees are. We just simply want to be a supporter of trying to do more for the environment through solid waste management. The use of the fees is really ultimately a local issue that should be properly left to the regional government and locals to figure out. So,
thank you, Mr. Mason. Representative Barker.
Mr. Dewey, you said something that surprised me, and I just want to make certain I understand it. I come from the upper end of the Willamette Valley rather than the lower end, and so some of the things you said are handled apparently in a very different way than we handle them. You indicated that there's no franchise, but companies compete with each other, is what I think you said. Does that mean that Company A might pick up from my right-hand neighbor, Company B from me, and Company C from my left-hand neighbor, or does it mean something else?
It does, Representative Cannon and Representative Barnhart. And if I may first, I just want to clarify a comment that I made to be clear, and I will get to that.
Thank you.
With regard to, I don't disagree that with regard to diesel emissions, there are greenhouse gas impacts. What I meant to say, if I didn't say succinctly, is that the retrofit program, I believe, spoke to the particulates. And so that's what I understood. So with regard, sir, to your question, I was talking about the Portland market. It's the commercial or the business market.
Yes.
So in the Pearl District, for example, which you know of, I think, a little bit about, you could have on one day three various different trucks, companies, going down the same street at, you know, a certain time in the morning. In most jurisdictions, you don't have that. It's franchised both on the residential and on the commercial side. And I think what they're trying to do in Portland is keep the smaller operator in play and be able to be competitive with regard to price. But what I wanted to be sure is that because that market is unique, our investment patterns are a little different than they would be in other jurisdictions. And so it's more difficult for us to make the investments we'd like to make, notwithstanding we think green, that going to the next generation. Hopefully that helped out, sir.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Dewey, just out of curiosity, I'm just trying to separate out some of the different threads in your testimony. Does House Bill 2671 raise fees?
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, the answer is no, but it gives the opportunity for Metro to raise fees. They can raise fees tomorrow for other programs. It's our understanding that we were working for, I don't know, maybe a year or so on this diesel retrofit program, and then we were somewhat surprised the council said, well, we can't do it. We need to have it clarified in state law. So that's why we came here. I think the issue is that does this expand the authority of Metro and raise solid waste fees for activities that we generally would not support? I think that's the issue. And we want to have a nexus between solid waste fee and the system. That's what we'd like to have, and that's what we argue for. I think if we do this right, we can get there. But I think the bill is right now a little too expensive.
So, again, just to make sure I'm understanding, so your testimony is about disagreement over the distribution of the pie and not the size of the pie and the flexibility in that distribution.
Mr. Chair, Representative Bailey, not really. I tried to also say that we do get very concerned about the size of the tip fee itself. And at some point in time, it has an adverse effect on the individual that's paying the monthly bill. And so one of the things that we really can't necessarily put parameters around this, in some ways what we have to do is have a good working relationship with Metro to make sure that if we develop a program like this, and I'll use the outdoor school, because Metro did pass a provision to increase the fee for funding of outdoor schools. And we were very concerned initially about how high that was going to be. And over time, it was significantly lower, and so we didn't voice our, you know, avid opposition to that. We are concerned. There are two parts, as I said. One is, where do the fees go, and how big is the fee? And quite frankly, the tip fee is pretty significant. I mean, in terms of all the fees, they're not inconsequential by any means. So we have to be very concerned about and have a collaborative approach to what is the right size of this.
Thanks, Representative Smith.
Thanks. And it might have been valuable for me to ask my questions not only of you, but also of the proponents at the beginning. And if at some point the chair wants to bring them back up, or if there's somebody else who can help answer my questions, it'd be helpful. And I apologize to everybody if I'm just slow, which is conceivable, maybe likely. I'm hoping you might be able to explain to me, as if I'm a middle schooler, how the money works. Because I heard you say, at one point I heard you say, well, it doesn't raise any fees. And then I heard you say, but you are concerned about the fees. Now, maybe I interpret that to mean this would give, that maybe Metro is allowed to raise fees under certain circumstances, and this gives them another set of circumstances in which they can raise them. Maybe that's what you meant. I haven't heard that, but that's sort of what I'm thinking you're meaning. But if you can explain to me kind of how the money works, both as simply and as few words, so I don't get confused, and I apologize for that, it'd be valuable. Thanks.
Some of the rest of us could use that, too. Thank you.
Representative Cannon and Representative Smith, and Metro may feel that I didn't do a very good job on this, and I apologize, and they are welcome to your indulgence to come forward. So Metro is pretty unique, and they have a, quite frankly, whoever put together the kind of a funding mechanism for Metro was very bright. Because they have the regional systems fee and an excise fee, and they have this solid waste, if you will, tip fee. And that funds a lot of the programs. And so it's not a property tax. They have programs that are related, but a large bulk of their revenue comes from the solid waste industry. So it's worked pretty well. So the situation is that Metro could raise fees tomorrow to enhance recycling opportunities. They could do that tomorrow, you know.
Regardless of what we do here.
Regardless of what you do here. So what happened, though, is that we were having this discussion with regard to what do we do about diesel emissions, and why don't we see if we can find a funding source to help the haulers out to retrofit their diesel trucks. City of Portland is requiring that we move in this direction, but Metro didn't go down that road. There was a, if you will, a source of money available to do that, and council said it's not related to the solid waste industry because it's a transportation issue.
Yeah, I get that part.
So what this would do is allow them to raise fees on behalf, at least for our purpose, for a transportation component. I guess I didn't do very well.
Let's go ahead and have Metro come back up to address this question in particular. So if there's anything else for Mr. Dewey or Mr. Mason before we get Metro back up to explain the fee structure in a little more detail, that would be great.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Maybe I shouldn't say a little more detail, a little more of the middle school vernacular, which I'm all too familiar with.
Ben, you should be able to translate it for us.
I wish I could.
Could I jump in? Randy Tucker, Metro. Scott's going to, I can't explain the fees. I'll let Scott take that on. I spend more time with you guys than with them. The one thing I wanted to clarify, there's been a couple of mentions of the outdoor school, and I just want to note that that was a controversial decision that the council made several months ago, but it was made under the current statute, and it also, what hasn't been mentioned is that the funds go to solid waste education at outdoor school. So there, it's only for education related to solid waste. So just wanted to make that one clarification.
Thank you.
Chair Cannon, representatives, Scott Robinson again from Metro. Actually, if I could just elaborate on Mr. Tucker's comment just a bit more.
I'm probably wrong.
No, he's absolutely correct. what was referred to as the outdoor school is actually funding of waste reduction education through that vehicle. We have changed. We actually currently conduct waste reduction education amongst schools throughout the metropolitan area. So we send people out to do waste reduction education actually in the school environments. In analyzing that particular offering, one of the things that we quickly discovered, of course, is that through the outdoor school, we actually can reach more kids more effectively with consistent education, because all sixth graders go through that program, whereas with the other waste reduction education program, it's by volunteerism on the part of the individual school to sign up for the program.
Okay,
just to make clear that it's part of our existing empowerment.
But and that was permissible under this section of statute before
already, obviously.
Yes, okay, yes. Chair Ken, absolutely yep. Correct. Now, moving to the issue of a clear, I guess, attempt to articulate the fee structure. There are.
Can I interrupt just for half a second?
Yes, Representative.
Oh, yes.
Sorry. So elucidation of the fee structure is it might be helpful. It is a helpful piece. I just kind of want to know how it works. So I get a bill,
yep.
Right, to pay for garbage, and I pay X garbage company, or I pay you, and I assume I pay a garbage company, and I assume that they take some of that money and they give it to you, and that the reason they're allowed to charge me for their garbage because you say so, and according to his question, because there's a few different companies that might do it, and some of it's overlap, and I don't really know how that works either. And then, based on the money that you take, okay, you know, and how do you make the decisions about what money you're taking from them so that they get to charge me, right? So I just kind of want to have a sense of how it works,
right? So I'll try to keep this as clear as possible.
Yeah.
First and foremost, probably the easiest way to start is you as a bill payer, and you're getting curbside collection. That bill is something you're going to get from your local hauler. That rate is set by the local jurisdiction. Okay, so
that's you.
The local jurisdiction, the individual city, typically a city. So that jurisdiction is going to set the rate, and they are going to look at the cost structure of that individual hauler to determine what that rate allowance is, if you will. Typically, some sort of cost plus return, allowable return. Underneath that hauler is the question of where does that then go? Where does that material that's been collected at the curbside, it's transferred to somebody, and ultimately gets to a landfill? There are, in effect, two players in the marketplace. There are private participants, and the Metro itself is a participant in the market. So there are three basic fees that make up the overall fee structure that we look at. A tip fee is purely the cost of Metro providing the service. If you go to the Metro transfer station in the southern part of the metropolitan area down near Oregon City, or if you went to the central transfer station, that reflects our costs of collecting it, sorting it, doing recovery, transporting it ultimately up to Arlington and or other landfill sites. Okay, so that's our cost structure. We typically service as a benchmark to other providers who provide like services. So, for example, Waste Management, Inc. owns its own facilities, does its own transfer, and has its own landfills, and may or may not match our price. So we're sort of a provider of last resort, if you will. And we typically service as a benchmark. So that tip fee is based on our cost structure, cost of doing business. On top of that, and so therefore, our costs are recovered based on the tonnage that comes to our facilities. The regional system fee is a different fee. That fee is paid by all tonnage that goes ultimately that is collected in the metropolitan area, and it's assessed on all tonnage irrespective of who collects it or where it ends up. Okay? but it's from all tonnage that's in the system. That's the regional system fee. That fee is paid by all private entities. Our representatives would see that particular fee and anybody who's an integrated service provider would see that particular fee. Those fees are set through a rate-setting process, and that rate-setting process is the one that Mr. White referred to. It's an annual process that we go through, the first meeting of which occurred this last Tuesday. The third component is an excise tax. That is a Metro's charter, and it's statutory. The way we're established, we have an excise tax capability that allows us to layer that on top of services we provide, not only in solid waste, but our enterprise revenue sources, such as the zoo, for example, and so on. Those fees are what support the general fund expenses of Metro. Okay, that's a different bucket of dollars, if you will. The one that we're referring to with respect to what the use of the funds would be is the regional system fee. So it's the one that's applied to all tonnage. So in effect, what we're saying, to simplify, what we're looking for is right now we have the ability to set a regional system fee. We have the ability to collect on all tonnage. What we have is a limitation on what that fee then can subsequently turn around to be used for to fund. And we would like to have symmetry in that. And that symmetry being the ability to then utilize those funds to work through the regional haulers who are paying that fee. And in this case, the most immediate of those applications would be in a diesel retrofit program. But we view other programs being quickly in line to access those funds.
That's helpful. That's very helpful. Thank you very much. So, and is there argument, or some mythical person's argument, that the reason this allows you to increase fees, and maybe it just doesn't at all, okay? And so first of all, if it doesn't at all, let me know that it doesn't at all. That'd be helpful. Representative Bailey's question was really helpful. So maybe one answer is no. The other answer is yes, and the reason is because it has some impact on your cost of doing business, and if you can include more things in your cost structure, it could allow your number to get bigger, and then you'd increase fees. Because, hey, look, we just have to just cost us more money now because we're doing more things. But maybe what I just said is hogwash, and maybe there's an option three. So can you raise fees? Can you not raise fees? Does it have any impact on your ability to raise fees or likelihood of raising fees?
Chair Ken and Representative Smith, 2671 does not do anything with respect to changing our ability to raise fees or not. We have the ability to raise fees currently. Okay? What it does, and what the fear may be, is that what we're doing, again, is providing symmetry to how we can use those fees. So the degree to which there was concern about the use of those fees in a diesel retrofit program or in a compressed natural gas program or in a stormwater runoff program, that those would be ones that would require additional fee collection, then it might be viewed that way. But again, that fee collection process or fee setting process is one in which the rates are reviewed through a public process for which council then subsequently has to adopt that rate structure.
Thank you very much.
Representative Bailey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Tucker, I have a non-technical question for you.
Thank goodness.
We have a statewide audience on the Internet, and obviously our constituencies.
That is riveted right now.
The Nielsen ratings on this are off the charts.
There's a quiz on the tip fee, the system fee, and the excise tax later on.
I'm curious if you could describe, since we're talking about a specific area of the state, could you talk about what is Metro Regional Government?
Metro Regional Government is...
What is Metro?
What is Metro? Metro is the regional government of the Portland metropolitan area. We have our own jurisdictional boundary that encompasses 25 cities and parts of three counties, Multnomah, Clackamas, and Washington. The jurisdictional boundary is not coterminous with the boundaries of any of those other jurisdictions. We have as our primary responsibility under the Metro Charter protection. Let me see if I can get this right, to protect and enhance the environment and quality of life for ourselves and future generations, or something along those lines. That's the primary mission of Metro as adopted by the voters of the Portland metropolitan region. And we have also, I believe this is where I'm getting, you wanted to ask me a non-technical question, I better stop.
I should have a follow-up for
I could list what our main services are.
That's okay.
Okay.
Is the Metro Council an elected body?
Yes, we have 7 elected councillors, 6 by district, 1 throughout the entire region who is the council president. And that is what makes Metro unique in the country. There is no other regional elected body of that sort that we're aware of.
So, would it be correct to say then that if Metro, under an expanded authority to use fees, were to use it in a way that caused fees to rise, or in a way that the public was not happy with or customers were not happy with, that they might have a recourse at the ballot box to express their discontent in the same way that they might with me for asking
right.
this question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is correct. The Metro Council has its own freestanding elected authority and freestanding political legitimacy in that regard. The councillors serve 4-year terms, and they have to stand for election. They have term limits of 3 terms. Council president has a term limit of 2 terms. And, yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And those are great questions, and I think lead nicely to what I think will be my perhaps only and final comment on this issue, which is that as someone who is generally favorably disposed to untying the hands of local government, and particularly when that local government is my own, and it is the only one that's singled out for special treatment under state law of this sort, I recognize there may be a need to sort of work on this bill to some extent, but I also look at this in a pretty favorable light. So I just address that comment to our audience and to you. Representative Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. You beat me to it. This is not my local government, and that may be good or bad. I don't know at this point. But I would say that the original language was fine with me, especially after I heard the additional comments. The language that's been proposed by Metro by striking parts of lines 9 and all of 10 and part of 11 is also fine with me. All of that would be fine. I certainly would be perfectly happy to look at whatever Mr. Dewey comes up with.
Great. Well, with that, I don't think there's any further sign up for testimony on 2671, so I'm going to close the public hearing. Thank you, members, for your attendance, and I'll ask you to stick with us for a few more moments while we do a work session on House Bill 2080. So I'm going to open up House Bill 2080. Members, I think you'll recall this bill from our previous work session and the public hearing that preceded that. Let me ask Neil Mullane. And Christine and I wouldn't get your last name right if I tried, but please come on up. And while they do, it reminds you a little of the process that got us to this place on this Graywater bill. It is the product of the Interim Energy and Environment Committee. Now Senator Dingfelder and her committee, on which I served, spent several hearings on this issue and a good deal of time during the interim working the bill to the point where it was introduced after the public hearing. With our committee administrator's help, we convened a work group that included representatives from State Plumbing Board, Willamette Riverkeepers, Clean Water Services, Special Districts Association, City of Portland, Building Codes Division, Confluence Consulting, DEQ, League of Cities, and eWeb to review the proposed bill, make suggestions, and those helped result in the amendments that we reviewed at the previous work session. Though that stakeholder group has also seen the -2, I think, amendments, and we have not received any negative feedback to that, unless Beth corrects me. I think that's the case, unless something came in at the very last moment. They still appear supportive of this bill. The bill's framework, just to provide an additional piece of background, as you'll remember, it sets a broad definition for gray water, and I know that was one of the areas of concern. It then specifies that the department, DEQ, is to do rulemaking that will result in a general permit for potential people, residential homeowners, who would like to install gray water systems. That rulemaking and that permit will specify within their definition sort of eligible types of water for reuse and eligible systems. And the amendments, I'll get to that in a second. Let me move to that now. So the amendments that you have in the -2s do several things. One is that they clarify the definition. So the gray water, there was a concern, I think, raised by Representative Smith that the gray water definition was awkward. Might have been a drafting issue on the soil diapers, and did that apply only to laundry wastewater, or was it meant to apply to any water? Clearly was meant to apply to any water that was contaminated by soil diapers would not qualify as gray water. We did, I think, successfully clarify that by dividing 7 into sections A and B. So that was one change that you see in the dash 2s. There have been questions about why soil diapers are called out in this definition, why not other potential contaminants. And the reason for that addition was really, it was the thing that rose to the top of the list of stakeholder concern when we met as a group to figure out how this definition needed to be worked. Say that the sort of biggest request was that we really make it absolutely clear in state law that water contaminated by soil diapers was not eligible for gray water, so and for water reuse. It also, what this dash 2 amendments do is clarify that in the rulemaking process, the agency DEQ must ensure the requirements that they come up with for gray water systems must ensure the protection of public health, safety, and welfare. This is bottom of page 4 through top of page 5. They pulled in these criteria about public health, safety, and welfare, protecting public health, safety, and welfare, public water supplies, and waters of the state, brought that directly into that that section on their rulemaking. I know there may be a particular question about the extent to which, well, I'll let that question emerge, or I may ask it, but let me first ask you to introduce yourself and provide any comments, either corrections of anything that I've said or additions, comments on the dash 2s.
Representative Cannon, members of the committee, my name is Neil Mullane. I am the administrator of the Water Quality Program for DEQ. And with me is Christine Spekovich. She's our policy analyst for the water program. I'm not going to venture forth to correct the chair on anything he says. But in this particular bill, and looking at what we have in dash 2 amendments, I would concentrate on the section 3 there, sub 7, and the breakdown that we have for the definition. And I think it does clarify what we meant in terms of the discussion last time. And in terms of, I think, a lot of concern about the bacterial levels that we might get from the soil diapers and the fecal matter, and very supportive of that. I also wanted to add to that is that, and if I could take just a second, you know, when we develop rules for any type of programs for the department, particularly in the water program, obviously we're looking at the chemical, physical, and biological problems that may occur with that particular waste stream. And as we would develop this particular committee, we would be looking specifically at what other states have done and any other data that they had developed on those particular waste streams and evaluate it and look to see what they had found out in terms of any toxics, anything that was, you know, in terms of biological contamination, and really get an idea as to, for those different types of gray water, what are the real concerns? And then you would go from there to say, okay, if you have a detailed concern of a particular waste stream, that is the gray water waste stream, what are you concerned with, and then what would we do? Would we develop some type of treatment system for that, or we would restrict the use? You could use it on the surface, or would you have to do subsurface? And we've already started looking at some of the other states and what they do in terms of the waste streams from gray water, and most of them do permit them. However, a lot of them have just subsurface discharge. That is, they require that the material be, if you're going to irrigate it with it, that it's below the surface so people don't come in contact with it. And then as you go from there, if you're going to have some contact with it, they increase the amount of treatment that you would need because you're going to have some exposure to the public. And I think that's exactly the type of approach an advisory committee would do, is that we would look at the data, look at the information, and it, regardless of what we're concerned with on the chemicals and the biologicals, we would be looking at whether or not we would need to have more treatment, and if we're going to allow it to go into some type of surface, we would even have more treatment. And we would make those judgments within the committee, and we'd have on the committee people who would really give us some advice in terms of the, you know, the concerns we would have for the public health, and we would go on from there. And I would speak just a little bit to section 4. I think it makes it a much easier
read of the bill, I think, right now to have all of the information that's now in Section 4. It's very clear to us in terms of going forward and requiring a permit, having the advisory committee minimizing the requirements on the property owner, and then actually having very clearly the intent or the goals of that particular permit program to protect public health and the water supplies and waters of the state.
Questions? Representative Benz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is my understanding correct about some of the cities charging sewer rates by the amount of water that goes through the sewer line from the house?
Chair Cannon, Representative, I do believe, I don't know the structures for a lot of the different cities, but the volume is one of the characteristics for many of the rate structures.
Follow up, Representative Benz.
Is it managed? I'm just unfamiliar with the systems, but is it managed by the measurement of metering of the water into the house, and then they just make an assumption regarding that which is leaving the house?
That is correct. And I believe they try to do it at certain periods of time, so they take into consideration the amount of water you might be using for irrigation outside your home and that type of thing.
Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Barnhart.
Well, I'm back on the same issue that we were talking about last time. When you were describing just now the definition in sub 7 on the top of page 3, you again used the terms, and I think I'm quoting, soiled diapers and fecal material. This definition doesn't say fecal material, it says soiled diapers. I have to, now, one of the things that I was told earlier was that perhaps other states use a definition like this that includes the term soiled diapers. And I don't want to belabor it, but although I am belaboring it, I guess, aren't I? But I'll tell you, this definition is, on the surface of it, embarrassing because it leaves out so much. I would either rather not have the term soiled diapers in there, or I'd rather include the broader term that you actually used in your testimony just now. What's my? Can you help me out of my problem so that I don't have to worry about this?
Representative Barnhart, we just want you to carry the bill on the floor using the term soiled diapers, or perhaps Representative Smith's preferred version.
Poopy diapers.
But I know that it was a serious question.
No, this is. And I continue to have the problem I did before, and it really goes back to the question Representative Bailey asked at our last hearing. What about everything else that's left out of here? You mentioned one thing specifically. What about everything else that is perhaps at least as dangerous as soiled diapers?
Chair Cannon, Representative. As I read the definition and you look at soiled diapers, the concern is for the fecal matter that might be in soiled diapers. And so if you took out the term soiled diapers and just put fecal matter, I think it would cover exactly what we're thinking about here. In terms of all the other things, that is exactly what the advisory committee would be looking at. I mean, we have recently finished a complete rework of our Division 55 rules, which cover how we use recycled water from sewage treatment plants. And in putting those rules together, the committee looked at all of those different types of contaminants that would be in sewage and then decided how you would use that water and what type of treatment you would need in order to protect for the various beneficial uses you would put that water to. And that's exactly the same process we would use here. Regardless of whether we list everything we could think of here, we would be looking at what is in those waste streams and developing rules to protect the public health and the water from those.
And I want to stick with this point for a moment, because there are already rules, if not laws, related to what a homeowner can put down the drain in the first place. I mean, if we're talking about sort of dangerous solvents, for instance, we're prohibited already from disposing of certain dangerous chemicals down our sinks already. Is that not the case?
Chair, yes, I believe so. And some communities probably have even more restrictive requirements on that.
Is when you look at this bill, is there any way of interpreting this, in your view, Do you? Is it your view that you would be limited or prohibited from narrowing the acceptable permitted use of gray water to something like only in Representative Bence's district during summer months and only sink water? If your advisory committee came back and said, look, this is the only way we think we can meet these public health standards, would that be permissible in your view under this bill to narrow it just to that?
Chair, yes, I believe it would be.
Any other questions? Representative Bailey.
I just want to be clear for the record. Is it your intention that in examining public health aspects, the DEQ would do an analysis of compounds that may be in the gray water stream that may not be defined as hazardous substances from a risk analysis in the wider environment or in the quantities in which they may be found and the concentrations they may be found in a watershed or in a river, but that may have different, and we don't know, may have different properties or effects in higher concentrations in a specific location? Is it your intention to examine those potential substances?
Chair Cannon, Representative Bailey, yes.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Seeing none, I think you are excused, and I would accept a motion on the Dash 2 amendments.
Mr. Chair, I move to adopt the House Bill 2080-2 amendments, dated 3309.
Representative Smith moves to adopt the 2080-2 amendments, dated 3309. Is there any discussion? Well, let's do it this way. Let's take a roll call vote. So if the clerk would please call the roll.
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Is this on the amendments?
This is on the amendments, yep.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Benz?
Excuse?
Representative
Boone?
Aye. Representative Jensen?
Aye.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair
Gillian? No.
Chair Kim?
Aye. The Dash 2s are adopted, and I would accept a motion on the bill.
Mr. Chair, before that, yep. Let me say that I'm willing to grant a courtesy vote to get the bill to the floor. I'm not sure I'm able to vote for the bill with the definitions the way they're drafted. If you want to get it to the floor, I'll help you do that, but I'm not certain I can vote for it once it gets there.
Okay, I appreciate that that notice, Representative Barnhart, and I will appreciate your vote in helping us get it to the floor, and I can assure you that we will, and I recognize this can be I have at various times called it a sort of hollow, empty promise, but in this case I can make sure it's a very real one to bring this definition, the particular definitional question that you have raised, to the attention of our Senate counterparts when it gets there.
And Mr. Chair, I would move House Bill 2080 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Smith moves House Bill 2080 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any additional discussion? Representative Gilliam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just briefly, notwithstanding the hard work that you've done on this, I mean no disrespect about with my dissent, and I certainly see the potential for saving water with this concept. But I would much prefer that we were going slower, perhaps with a test. I appreciated the comments about the possibility for working some issues out in the, what kind of a committee is it? Advisory mm-hmm. committee. But still, this strikes me, and I know this is probably part of your vision for it, this strikes me as a huge prospect or a project that will take a lot more planning than I see evident by DEQ. And I think we're hanging our hat on the permit process. It'll somehow, permits will bring us order and safety and so forth. And my vision is this could be a colossal failure because of the what we're biting off. I would love to see us go with a test or some other slower process. But I just want to put that on record, and I do appreciate your work on it, and I do appreciate the potential for saving water.
Thank you, Representative Gilliam. Any other comments, Representative Smith?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yeah, I'll be voting in favor. I think that, however, in the various
iterations of definition. My impression is the discussion we've had on the record will be helpful guidance to the, and almost even sufficient guidance, along with goodwill on behalf of the agency, to make sure that really important and obvious things aren't left out. So I will vote aye without too much reservation. That said, I do hope that we'll hold ourselves to the common promise to work as the bill moves forward to make sure the definitions are as best we can. And ultimately, we know that some of the best statutes ever been written have been short and simple, and we've had to figure them out through either courts or regulatory decisions later. So, you know, speaking out of both sides of my mouth, you know, good bill should pass, and let's make it better. That's what I have to say.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Benson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think I'm going to be voting against the main bill here today for a couple of reasons that have already been expressed, and also for the reason that I'm not sure if we implement this without, and a number of the other things that we have on the agenda as far as the agency is concerned, what kind of staffing effect it will have. And in this particular session, with the problems that we are facing on down the road, whether or not we will have the ability to be able to provide the personnel in the agency to watch and manage this program. I do share the concern that this, on a statewide sort of basis, this is pretty... And I don't like the idea of a little trial balloon someplace. I mean, on a project like this, that doesn't strike me as something we're going to gain very much from. But I'm just not real sure we've got the ability to fund the personnel that we will need. Will this have a subsequent referral?
I appreciate the question. We have a fiscal statement on this bill and on the amendments to this bill, and it indicates that there is not a fiscal impact in this or the next biennium. So we're using that to and move it directly to the floor.
Yeah, I appreciate that, Mr. Chair. I'm never real sure where these fiscals come from. Pro or con, yeah. I am concerned about the workload within the agency. If it is on a statewide basis, and I probably would object to it if it weren't on a statewide basis, too. So I sense that they're probably the votes here to move this forward, and probably the support on the Senate side to make some amendments and changes in it. If that were not true, I probably would be inclined to help you with it.
Thank you. And I do want to note for the record, looking at this fiscal again, they're very clear about the 09-11 budget and its lack of impact there. They do say that when it comes to 11-13, it will depend on the outcome of this rulemaking process and the permitting program that DEQ sets up, and clearly they'll have to reevaluate at that point. So your point is well taken, Representative Jensen. Representative Bernhardt.
Thank you. I wanted to note that I am concerned about the potential that some court interpreting, or even the agency interpreting this bill down the road, will necessarily include in their interpretation the discussions in committee. I've been involved in several bills that have equally simple definitions and purposes where the agency that finally had to write rules on the bill was had an extremely difficult time understanding the things that were discussed in committee that weren't in the black and white letter of the bill itself. And that's one of the reasons why I'm very concerned about this definition. I do hope the Senate will fix it. I'm worried about it. I can easily imagine a situation in which a judge at some point reads that definition and comes to a very different conclusion than the one that has been brought to the committee in both in our conversation and from the agency. And I think the time to fix that is before the bill's adopted into law rather than trying to fix it after the fact.
That's your point.
And having participated in these discussions around the definition for some time, I will say that it's complicated by the fact that we're talking about gray water used in different parts of the state in different seasons with different levels of treatment, as we heard described by the agency. They're maybe imagining that ground or gray water that is reused subsurface is held to a different standard than gray water that is applied at the surface level. And so the definition, the intent with the definition was actually to leave it as broad as possible, knowing that. And there were people in the work group who resisted even adding the soil diapers language on here because they're like, well, you know, we don't know what kind of treatment technology may be available. We don't know if it's being used. I think nobody was arguing, I want to be clear, I don't think anybody was arguing for the appropriateness of reusing water that was contaminated by fecal matter. And I certainly take your point on the potential for greater clarity in the definition on that issue. But broadly, generally speaking, the intent was to leave the definition broad, knowing that that would give the agency the appropriate ability to go back at it, say, in different conditions, different parts of the state, at different seasons, for different types of water coming out of the home, permits may or may not be acceptable. And we as a committee did not have the capacity to deal with that level of analysis, that level of detail, and it would not have been appropriate for us to do so. We're going to leave that to the agency. So that was the intent. But on the fecal matter issue, where I think everyone agrees, we do not want to create any opening for people to reuse water that's contaminated by fecal matter. I think your proposal seems perfectly reasonable and consistent with the intent of the authors of the bill.
I'd have been happier with the old definition.
I understand.
Leaving it out altogether, or with the definition that included the term human fecal material, rather than the one we actually used.
Yep.
The one we actually used, I think, is misleading and too narrow because it's mentioned at all. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Representative Smith.
Thanks. And I apologize for speaking again. I want to say one thing to the record in our collective memory. It seems to me that in the main clause of definition, we might consider words such as gray water means, you know, water with minimal contamination or uncontaminated water or, you know, some general definition. So what we mean is not really dirty water. And really dirty water doesn't get to go to the ground, and not really dirty water does. And I looked up the Sherman Act, because this is something, and the reason why I'm overcoming my own apology to speak again is because the degree to which our committee is comfortable granting authority to a regulatory body is one of the most festering and frequent questions we are grappling with. One of the most important pieces of legislation ever passed by the United States Congress is the Sherman Antitrust Act. I will read only the first sentence. Every contract, combination of the form of trust or otherwise, or conspiracy in restraint of trade or commerce among the several states or with foreign nation is declared to be illegal. It says very little else. We knew then, in 1890, that it would be impossible for any legislative body to get together every 2 years and maintain our intelligence with the same speed as the economy was changing and growing. It is to me absolutely legitimate, in fact, more than legitimate, necessary for us to bequeath some degree of power to the folks who will be able to keep up with this stuff faster than our brief lives in the legislature will muster. So I am going to say, for future memory, simplicity in definition is probably our ally, along with goodwill among the regulatory body. I think we should say so on the floor, translate that message to the Senate. I agree with almost everything Representative Barnhart said, and nonetheless, I think this is a good bill.
Great. Thank you. Any final comment on this?
Will the clerk please? Representative Jensen squeaked in.
Well, I find myself in the same position that my learned colleague to the right here is, and I find it difficult to have to admit that I agree with Representative Barnhart. I don't want to establish some sort of bad record though I think we've agreed more often than some than we have disagreed over the years. I think there is a lot of wisdom that you've heard today by both Representative Smith and Representative Barnhart on this issue of definition. And I would ask you to, if this goes beyond the House, which I assume probably will, but if it does go beyond the House, that you would convey those words to the Senate, the chair on the Senate side, to have them look at and consider it. All things considered, while I'll still say with my vote today, I would like to have you know it's not cast in bronze that I will make the same vote when it comes up on the floor.
Thank you, Representative Jensen. And with that, would the clerk please call the roll?
Representative Bailey?
Aye.
Representative Barnhart?
Aye.
Representative Boone?
Aye.
Representative Jensen?
No.
Vice Chair Smith?
Aye.
Vice Chair Gilliam?
No.
Chair Cannon?
Aye, and the motion carries.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Gilliam.
I just want to be clear on this. Representative Jensen joined me in dissent, but I am the only representative he disagreed with. Is that correct?
Now that's a precedent we can accept.
I appreciate that.
Speaking to the record, for the clarity of the courts looking at this afterwards, yes.
Thank you, committee, for your good work and thoughtful commentary on this. I can assure you the Senateificants there will take great interest in the bill and great interest in what we have to say about it. And I will carry this bill on the floor. And with that, we will close the work session on House Bill 20 and close the House Committee on Environment and Water.